I think that's it for admin.
Okay, so with that, we can move on to the first agenda paper Marcus is looking after. Agenda paper two, new topic, acquisition of groups of assets.
Yes, good morning, everyone. The committee received the request to clarify how an entity accounts for the acquisition of a group of assets that does not constitute a business. Specifically, the submitter asked for clarity on how to allocate the transaction price to the identifiable assets acquired and liabilities assumed when A, the sum of the individual fair values of the identifiable assets and liabilities in the group differs from the transaction price, and B, the group includes identifiable assets and liabilities initially measured both at cost and at an amount other than cost. On acquisition of a group of assets, paragraph 2B of IFRS 3 requires an entity to do the following. Firstly, identify and recognize the individual identifiable assets acquired and liabilities assumed. Secondly, allocate the cost of the group of the individual identifiable assets and liabilities based on their relative fair values at the date of the acquisition. The submitter thinks that this requirement might establish initial measurement requirements for a group of assets acquired that is not a business. However, other standards also specify the initial measurement requirements for particular assets and liabilities. Accordingly, the submitter thinks that there might be a conflict between the initial measurement requirements of IFRS 3 and the other standards and sought clarification on which standard takes precedence in such cases. We considered two possible accounting treatments. In our view, IFRS 3 does not provide initial measurement requirements. Instead, it sets out how to determine the transaction price of the individual assets acquired and liabilities assumed. Once the transaction price of each identifiable asset and liability has been determined, each of the assets and liabilities will then be measured initially by applying the relevant standards. The alternative accounting treatment interprets IFRS 3 as providing initial measurement requirements. To the extent that the more specific initial measurement requirements in the other standards require initial measurement at other than cost, an entity applies those other measurement requirements. We think both are reasonable readings of the requirements in paragraph 2B of IFRS 3. And with this, I turn to question one on page 15 of the paper and ask whether you agree with our analysis of the requirements.
Okay, so first of all, question one, which is on page 15. So first we're going to focus on what you think the words say, and then we'll get on to what we might do. So anybody? Who wants to be first for the day? Young Sue.
All right. Actually, I do not support to provide both methods for the agenda decision. I support for view one or the staff view instead of the alternative view or view three. I have two reasons. The first reason is that the staff already showed at the table at page 13 of the agenda paper that the alternative view has some problems. And I don't think it is right for the committee to provide some kind of alternative view that already is known to have some problems. So that is my first point. And the second point I want to make is that even if an entity wants to apply the alternative view, I think they will end up with applying the IFRS 3 first. IFRS 9, for example, is requiring to define the transaction price and the fair value, both of them. So in order to find out the transaction price, I think the entity has to first find out, first has to apply the IFRS 3, the allocation process. So what I'm trying to say is that no matter what view they are taking, what approach they are taking, they will end up with using IFRS 3 first in the allocation process. So I prefer view 1 or the staff view instead of the alternative view or view 3.
Okay, thank you. Don't touch them. Barton Reinhard will let you in.
I'm not sure what's happening here, but
switched on.
Okay, good. I think it's there's a question in my mind as to whether paragraph 2B is intended to provide guidance that must be adhered to as consistent with what the staff has in its view, and I don't disagree with that, that being one way of looking at the requirements of paragraph 2B. But when I step back, I thought one of the intentions behind paragraph 2B was that when you acquire a group of assets that is not a business, that you should not record goodwill. And so if you don't record goodwill, then the intent is to allocate the cost to the net identifiable assets and liabilities acquired. And so having said that, I agree with the staff that it does not provide measurement guidance. It's trying to get at the cost allocation. And although I think the staff's view is one way of looking at those requirements and interpreting those requirements, I believe the alternate view also has merit from the perspective that if that's I think what is commonly seen in practice, and I think the reason people do that is because they look to the requirements in IFRS standards that are more specific in terms of how to determine the initial cost and use that to determine the allocation of the purchase price, and therefore avoid recording potentially day one gains and losses. The staff's approach would result in day one gains and losses on instruments such as financial instruments, which I think a lot of people would be troubled with. So, as I say, I think the alternate view that the staff has is another way, an appropriate way of reading the standards, on the basis that those IFRS standards are more specific in terms of the allocation and measurement of assets on initial recognition. And also, I guess a couple of other comments I would make is that it seems a little unusual that you would record a day one gain or loss on a financial instrument where the measurement, let's say a level one instrument, is much more certain than the measurement of the non-financial assets. And so that seems like an unusual result to have that. Having said all of that, I think in practice, outside of, say, the financial services space, if it's other industries where the financial assets or other assets that are initially measured at other than cost, those assets would tend not to be a significant portion of the whole, and often there's enough range in the measurement of the non-financial assets that you could end up with a reasonable result from a materiality perspective. So those are my thoughts.
Can I ask you something, Reinhardt, as a follow-up? So do you think it's the actual words in paragraph 2B that are confusing, or do you think it's more that people are thinking more generally about how, and this isn't a leading question, it's an innocent question, about from a sort of practice point of view, whether you should be going to more specific requirements and what the overall objectives were, as opposed to the words in the actual paragraph being confusing? Or do you think it's a combination of the two?
It's really, I think, a combination of the two. I think people look at those words in paragraph 2B, or at least I should say some people look at the words in paragraph 2B to essentially provide some overall guidance, scope guidance, in terms of it's not in the scope of IFRS 3, and again, should not reflect goodwill. So therefore, the conceptual basis allocated on a relative fair value measurement basis, but then those people who take the alternate view would say, okay, let's look to IFRS standards that are more specific in terms of how to measure those assets and liabilities on initial recognition. Let's look to those standards, and for the rest, where there's no specific guidance that would, use a relative fair value basis.
Okay. Thank you. And Bob?
I agree with a lot of what Reinhardt has said, and I agree mostly with the staff's analysis. I do think that there are two possible ways to read this. And so I then ask myself, is there one that's more relevant or representationally faithful than the other? And I agree with the staff that this is really about allocation, not measurement, and I couldn't get myself to thinking that there's one that's better than the other. I think they both have advantages and both have disadvantages. And as I think about, well, then would we you know, is it better off that we try to narrow practice down to one? Are we hindering the user in any way by having two methods? I'm not sure it really does. I'm not sure we get that drastically different answers either. So that's a long way of saying I've got myself to agree with the agenda decision. I think if I had to do it myself, I found the agenda decision a bit awkward, in that it kind of goes, well, okay, here's a one way to read it, and there's all the support for it. And by the way, there's another alternative.
Laid it out as
there's two ways.
Staff's heart was coming through.
And then I also found another word in there was interesting. I'm not sure if we, just not having enough experience, but we use this word before. We say that there are two interpretations. We call it interpretations. I'm not sure if we use that word before in agenda decisions.
Maybe if it's okay if we hold off and come back and let's talk and some. I mean, if obviously the committee agrees with an agenda decision, I think it'd be useful to talk through that.
So, and Bruce, if I can be strict, can we focus on how you read the words to start with, and then we'll come back to the what the course of action might be as a second question.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah, I kind of also went on a bit of a similar journey to the others in terms of what this was. I mean, when I first read it, my view was very simple. I just thought to myself, well, if I'm looking at fair values, I'd apply IFRS 13 to all the assets and liabilities and get a fair value. And then you start reading through it, and now we're jumping to the standard and jumping to that standard and trying to look at them. And to me, when I kind of went back and asked my team in terms of what we've done in practice, I mean, in practice, what we've seen is view one. I mean, that's kind of, and interestingly, we've never really seen people have a challenge with it. And we've done quite a number of these, but we've never really seen anybody, it surprised me. I'd never come across this in terms of the fact, maybe it's just in terms of where we work, but we'd actually never come across people having a challenge in terms of the application of it. excuse me, when I take a look at what my view is, I mean, I agreed with the view one of what the staff had said. I was kind of comfortable with where we got there. I guess in my mind, when I start picking away at the words, I can see where the others got to, Reinhardt and Bob got to, in terms of, yeah, you're right. So when you start talking about fair value, well, what do we mean by fair value? And I guess my challenge is, well, hang on, man, I've thrown into IFRS 13 fair value, because that's what I should be applying, or am I now going to start looking at all the individual standards and taking specific nuances there that don't apply? And if I start doing that, then I don't think that 2B gives me enough guidance. It just uses the word fair value, and we kind of, as a catch-all, wherever we've used the word fair value, we've generally kind of defaulted to IFRS 13. That's been the position since that standard came out. So when we start bringing in the nuances of IFRS 9, and well, hang on, what if there's an IFRS 41 thing, and this one said, I think we're in danger. So if the view is taken that that's the better way to be, then I think that this is not clear at all in terms of the wording, in terms of what fair value are we talking about. Whereas if we're prepared to just say, no, look, we think fair value guys go out and do it, you know, I guess the other side of it saying I think it's a very, very technical point. I mean, I don't know what the experience has been of others and where in practice this is actually a major issue. I didn't really pick that up from the paper. But to me, the guidance was, as I said.
Andrew.
Thanks. I think that I'm also personally in view one, because I think that when I look at IFRS 3, I think it first tells you in that paragraph which assets and liabilities to recognise, and it then tells you how to allocate the purchase price for the purposes of determining the acquisition cost of each of those assets and liabilities. And then once you've done that, you'll flick into the other standards to determine what you do afterwards. So I think if I look at words and read them slowly and carefully, that's where I end up. I also have a degree of discomfort with the alternative view because of the potential consequences which have been set out in the staff example. So I'm a little troubled by that. In relation to the question of financial instruments, I think that taking view one is entirely consistent with what the financial instrument standards would say, because they tell you first to look at the cost, the fair value, the consideration given or paid. And then only if you have something which is level one, do you then say, well, is there a quoted price and do I have a day one gain or loss? But that is a natural consequence of doing a relative fair value allocation in the first place if you have some kind of bargain purchase. In terms of what we might see in practice, I think that there are differing approaches taken in practice. You may see view one in some places you see view three, where the financial instruments are measured at fair value and then there's a relative allocation for the rest, which may be quite a neat way of avoiding having an immediate day one gain or loss in a level one financial asset or liability. But I don't think that's where the wording takes you on a precise reading of it. The other thing that occurred to me was, just looking sideways into some of the other discussions we've had, we have previously talked about the acquisition of an investment property and deferred tax consequences. And so I've not gone back in a lot of detail, but I just want to make sure we're being consistent here with what we were saying there. In relation to the tentative agenda decision, my personal preference would be to try to come to one view. It looks a little bit like an accounting policy choice at the moment, and I'm not quite sure I like that. If we ended up there, though, I would want it to be specific that it's an accounting policy choice, so that you choose one way or the other way, and you're not ending up cherry-picking between the two different approaches.
Thank you. Could I maybe throw out for any other commentators? I wonder, when we were looking at this as well, we wondered, and I'm interested in your experience and practice, whether some of what in practice actually is either called view one or view three actually is the same thing, but maybe people think of it as view three when we might call it view one or vice versa. And the only reason I say that is that built into, you'll see the staff paper under what we called view one or our view, is that we would assume that if in first pulling together the fair values of, you know, the identifiable assets and liabilities, you came up initially with, you know, quite a big difference between what you paid and what you think these, you know, the sum of the individual values are, we'd assume entities would naturally, as a next step, look very closely again at the individual fair values. And I just wonder, and if in practice that had a mixture of level one fair values, it'd probably say, that's a really good fair value, I'm not going to adjust that one because I know it's good. But maybe when I re-look at some of the others that they're a bit more kind of level three, I might actually adjust them. And I suppose in the words of the staff paper, we'd call that the staff view, whereas perhaps people might think of that as being, you know, more what's described as view three. But that's just a thought. I don't think that's reality.
Just before I bring you in, Tony, I realise I've been remiss because I think we've got two people attending remotely, and I just want to check whether they actually are attending. So firstly, Sandy, are you on the phone? And John?
Yes, I'm here on the phone, Sue.
Okay, thanks, John. Okay, I'll go to Tony and then I'll circle back to you, John. Tony?
So, I think I probably agree with quite a lot of what's been said. When I look at paragraph 2B, I think it tells me what the transaction isn't and what I mustn't do. So it's not a business combination. I mustn't book goodwill. And it then says what I've got to do is allocate what I've paid across the assets and liabilities that I've acquired. Where I think the tension arises is it doesn't go on and give me the rest of the model. So if the world was perfect and the aggregate fair values of everything I bought came out to the number that I paid, then it would be fine. But what that paragraph doesn't do is give me the rest of the model. I agree with Petrina, I think it is in the paper, that if the aggregate fair values turn out to be different, then the first thing that should probably be done is to have a think about whether or not the fair values are all accurate and reliable and so on. And I do think that would lead some people to say, well, if I have got a level one fair value, I don't really need to spend too much more time thinking about that. Then maybe I need to think about the values that I've attributed to the other assets. But in the absence of IFRS 3 or that particular paragraph providing the rest of the model, then I agree with the way the staff has set it out. I think that's a valid reading of the standard. but I don't think there is enough in the words to say that is the only way that the standard could be read. And if somebody said, well, actually, I'd like to use what are level one fair values, and the bit that's left over goes to the remainder of the assets, and the consequence is that there is no day one gain, I think I would struggle, given the words we have at the moment, to say that I think that's a bad answer. So I can see it both ways. My experience of practice is that that's what most people have done. But I think, in deference to everybody else, I'm not sure that's because they've thought it through in the way that it's explained in the staff paper, or because they've said, hey, I've got some level one fair values, and I know they must be the right answer, so I'll leave those as they are and allocate the rest, rather than thinking it through in the way it's been articulated in the paper.
And just to stress this a little bit, so certainly IFRS 3, particularly in the scope paragraph, doesn't then tell you what to do next, because sort of, it is a scope paragraph.
Yeah.
But isn't one argument the fact that you don't need to say what to do next, because once you know what your transaction price is, even if it's an allocated transaction price, then when you go to IAS 16 or IFRS 9 or all these other standards, they tell you what to do when you know what your price was.
And I think that's a perfectly acceptable way of reading it, but my sense of predominant practice at the moment is that
about what you read and how you read it.
Okay, but I still think that's the way people are interpreting it. And you go look at IFRS 9, and it says recognize initially at fair value,
and it tells you what to do if your transaction price is different.
It does, yeah. But I still think that, given that IFRS 3 doesn't explain the rest of the model, that it is a perfectly acceptable reading of it to look at the alternative.
Okay. Why are you pointing at your...
For John?
Yeah, I'm going to. Okay. John, do you want to come in now?
Yep, thank you. I'm firmly in view one. I mean, I've always thought that particular paragraph of IFRS 3 was telling one about how to allocate the transaction price to the actual group of assets, to the individual assets and liabilities in the group, and wasn't telling you anything about initial measurement. An initial measurement was governed by the individual standards under which the assets fell. I have concerns with the conclusions in the paper that there's an alternative view, because I think the implication is that we actually believe IFRS 3 might be telling you about something about initial measurement for when you acquire a group of assets. And I don't believe it is. I believe the initial measurement requirements for the individual assets are clearly within the relevant standards, and that paragraph should only be interpreted as telling one how to allocate the transaction price. I think the fact that view three and view two exist in practice probably arises from some discomfort at recognizing a day one gain on some assets when a group of assets are acquired, and some of those assets are ones that are level three fair values. So there's probably a discomfort in saying, well, I have a gain on some of these items just because I've allocated the consideration on a relative fair value basis. So people sort of would then read it as saying, well, maybe that paragraph says I can measure the fair value of instruments whose initial measurement is fair value, and the residual gets allocated to the assets that are whose initial measurement is not fair value. But I don't read the words that way at all. And I'm concerned that the conclusion on this item actually may lead to more diversity in practice, and also introduce the possibility that IFRS 3 is telling us about initial measurement is the standard up for initial measurement for when you acquire assets in the group, rather than the individual standards that apply to those individual assets and liabilities.
Okay, thank you. Bertrand.
Yes, maybe a similar comment as Tony. I don't disagree with the staff view. I find merit to the alternative view that the staff is expressing. But I must also admit, I understand the other views expressed in the paper. And I was just wondering whether there might be any other view. So just with the outreach that has been performed at this stage and just this paper, is it just enough to really reach a conclusion on such an issue? I'm a bit confused because honestly I don't know what the answer should be. I can't disagree and I don't disagree with the staff view for sure, but is it really the only way to interpret this issue, and above all, is it the proper one? Is there not a more accurate way of doing things? I must admit, as a practitioner, a day one gain or loss, we don't like that much. Above all, a day one gain, I mean.
Is there another way you think the words could be read, or are you just...
No, I would maybe what I'm just trying to say is maybe this issue might merit some form of additional search or additional research, so as to make sure that the answer is 100% sure, or we're 100% sure of what the answer should be.
Right. So. Does anybody else have anything they want to say on how they would read the words before we move on to what we might do? No?
Maybe. You understand? Yeah. Maybe I have to say something about what Bertrand just said. You know, I thought about it. I sent an email to Marcus this morning, but I thought about the case when a company purchased not just one financial asset, but multiple financial assets, mm-hmm. and how to allocate the purchase price or the group price onto each individual asset. There could be two ways. The first one is to allocate directly onto individual asset, and the other one is to allocate the group price, I mean the purchase price or the transaction price onto the group of financial asset first, and then to individual financial assets in that group. And that is also very important because sometimes the financial assets have different levels, level one, level three. And then, you know, after it is assigned, you know, allocated to each group of the financial assets, then the company can decide whether they have to allocate the cost by following paragraph 2B of IFRS 3 or by following IFRS 9 and assign a more reliable, you know, the fair value, which is level one financial asset first, and then assign the residual value to the other financial asset. So there is always some kind of mixtures of application of IFRS 3 and IFRS 9. So that is, you know, what I think Bertrand is worrying about.
Yeah, I mean, Yongsoo, if it's helpful, I think, because if I understand, you were asking about what is the staff view or view one in the paper, how do the mechanics work, is that right? And I think what we'd say is, in applying 2B, you first of all are taking your overall transaction price and allocating it based on the relevant fair values of all of the identifiable assets. In your case, let's say the identifiable assets include both financial assets with, say, where you have a level one, a level one fair value measurement, and perhaps you also have, you've acquired some financial assets that, say, have a level three fair value measurement. Well, I think what we'd say is when you're first doing that allocation of the overall transaction price, then you simply do that based on the relative fair values. Then when you're looking at what, you know, the initial measurement, you're in IFRS 9 for both of those separate assets, and you would apply the initial measurement requirements in IFRS 9 and also the requirements that tell you to do what to do with any difference between the allocated transaction price and the individual fair value.
I think that's probably also a very good example of what Petrina was saying before, because I'm guessing, even though 3 says to do it on a relative fair value basis, if you did get to a situation where there was, you know, any sort of materiality in the difference between the sum of those and the total fair value you had paid, in practice I suspect people probably would make confidence in the stuff that's level one and then work backwards from that. But I think technically speaking it's based on the relative fair values. Jim?
Yeah. I'd like to say that the words on the IFRS 3-2B are clear. If we read these wordings and follow the path, it should end up with wheel one for sure. But I think that that's, in practice, when I did my own outreach, I did find the alternatives, some other approaches. I asked them why they said that pretty much that's the what they do later with E3, we find the differences between the total of the individuals and the amount they paid. And they end up with some differences that where they think otherwise. What if they could do something to eliminate, even though the day one gain or loss is not prohibited and like the stuff mentioned here. But in practice, still there are more than one people think that they better not to have the day one or loss. So they redo the thinking and calculation and they eliminate. So I tend to say the words are clear, but just in practice, there are different ways and views.
Okay. Thank you. Marcus, do you want to say anything else, or can we move straight to what we do next?
Yeah, I can just say that we recommend that the committee does not add the issue to its agenda because we did not find sufficient evidence that the two views would lead to materially different outcomes. And therefore, we ask you whether you agree with issuing a tentative agenda decision.
Okay, so the staff recommendation is not to do standard setting, but to issue a very helpful educational agenda decision. So, views on that. Not educative, you see, we're changing it. Too hard to say. Bruce.
Thank you. I guess it's interesting. I look at what I wrote down. I mean, my view is I was happy with an agenda decision, I guess, until this discussion. As I said, I really saw this as a view one. I was quite firmly in that, and so I agreed with it. I guess, having listened to the views around the table, my view would be that I think we do need to do something more than an agenda decision. I mean, clearly people are, from what I've gathered, they are doing different things. And it's you know, I think the difference between them is material. Now, I don't really want to get into a massive discussion on the word material because I saw we used that, and I thought, you know, when we start talking about whether things are material, you need to start talking about, well, which line items we're talking about and what are we qualitative, quantitative, and we're not going to get into that right now. But I guess the reality is I think we've got two very different views, giving very different answers. And based on that, I think we would have to give some sort of proper guidance as opposed to just an agenda decision. Well, I mean, which means we'd need to decide which one we think is the right answer.
And just on the material differences, so far we haven't been able to get evidence, have we, in terms of how material the difference might actually be, or how, sorry, use a more neutral word, how big the difference might be between a view one and a view, whatever the other number is, application, the two different alternatives in the agenda decision.
I mean, that's right. I mean, to be fair, we haven't spent, you know, weeks and weeks searching in a sense. We obviously summarised in the paper. In terms of the, we obviously did outreach in the city, you'll see, but in terms of the outreach responses, and again, to, which were very helpful, by the way, we didn't get into specifics and no one was able to provide information or at least voluntarily provided information about numbers. So we haven't got that at the minute, which is why, you know, based on, as I say, what we have at the minute, we don't have that evidence. Maybe if we decided we should do more work, we could try to obtain that evidence. The only sort of caveat we put into that, I think you may have read in the paper, is not to say we can't do it or we shouldn't try. It's quite difficult potentially to work out how to get it, because at least for us sitting here in 30 Cannon Street, often the way we'll do that is try to access obviously publicly available information, and at least it's not the kind of thing I imagine we'd get there. So I
don't think you're going to get it, because I mean the reality is if people have done view one, they're not going to have done view two as an alternative.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a little bit tricky. Yeah. Okay.
I agree with Bruce. I think given the diversity of views and the different ways that it can be read, I think as I read through the paper, my first inclination was view one, but then as I read through the rest of the staff analysis, I can very much see where there could be differing views given the words that are in the standard. So I don't think an agenda decision is all that helpful. And I think if we believe there is one view and that's the right view, then the words do not support that in the standard as written, and so I think we would need to do something different.
Mary, did you want to react to that?
Reacting not so much to Bonnie's, but maybe Bonnie and Bruce together, just as we, as you start this discussion, which is, I think the staff is saying agenda decision is their recommendation if the committee believes that practice does not have to be narrowed further than view one or two. If the committee believes that practice should be narrowed further, then an agenda decision is not enough, and some kind of action would be taken. So I think part of what I'd be interested in hearing from you guys is whether you think the diversity that is represented by two views is something that you as the committee think has to be addressed to narrow practice, in which case I think it's not an agenda decision, it's some kind of standard setting. So it isn't trying to push you one way or the other, but I think, you know, when you, I think you both said something like, given the evidence of diversity, an agenda decision isn't enough. I think an agenda decision would acknowledge the validity of two readings and leave diversity. It's the question is, do you think it's an important practice issue to undertake standard setting to address?
Gary, did you want to add to that so people can think about what you've got to say before they come in?
First of all, in terms of supporting the staff, actually, I do. I think, you know, both alternatives can be read that way, and maybe view A or view one is the better way to do it. That doesn't mean the alternative is an awful way. I do think, I was part of a lot of negotiations in former life, both buying and selling, and paragraph 54 says we don't expect there to be a material difference. The reality is willing buyers, willing sellers, knowledgeable about it, they know what these assets and liabilities are worth or could be worth. You might have different values to you, but they probably know, have a sense of the street value or the monetary value of them. So whereas I think this is probably relatively common, I have trouble believing it's going to be material, because both parties are going to know it. You're going to expect to get paid for it if you've got a big unrealized gain. You're going to expect to pay for it. You expect to receive it if you've got the gain. So I think the forces, just negotiations and common information between both counterparties, forces you closer than you might think. I do think it's common, but I just don't think it's will be material all that often. Look at this paper. There's four views expressed, view one, two, and three, and the alternative view. I suspect if we get creative, there's more views, there's variance on it. So narrowing it down from several views to just two in of itself is something. I think I agree with Andrew, though. I think the better decision is this transaction-specific determinative or is an accounting policy choice? I do think if we're going to go forward with the two recommendations of the staff thing, we should process, is it an accounting policy choice or transaction-specific?
Okay, thank you. John, I might let you in. I'm guessing you might have something to say. No?
I don't think an agenda decision, I mean, I'm pretty uncomfortable with the agenda decision as it is. I do think that these situations can be materially different. I think in practice, people do go back and look at the fair values if there is a big difference between the individual fair values and the transaction price. They sort of revisit and relook at the fair values, particularly of the hard value items and the items that are in level three. I'm sort of uncomfortable issuing an agenda decision which says that both of these are valid interpretations, because I think if that's the case, then we ought to be doing something about it.
Okay. Thank you. Andrew?
I would agree with John on his last point. I'm not particularly comfortable with having an agenda decision that says you have two ways of doing it. I agree with what others have said, that it's going to be difficult to get hard evidence of how big the difference is in practice, because people haven't done both ways. The only thing that troubles me a little is that with the amendments to IFRS 3 and the definition of the business, asset purchases may become somewhat more common in the future, so this issue is likely to become more important. And so there, that takes me, from my perspective, to a place where I think we should do something. I don't think that an agenda decision is enough unless we say it's all right to have variations in practice, and I'm not sure that's quite our job. So I would support doing something further and looking to see what we think the most appropriate answer should be. If that means that there's a clarification needed to IFRS 3, so be it. If it's an interpretation, so be it. But I think we ought to do something.
Can I ask this? Why can't we have two alternatives in an agenda decision? If the purpose is to interpret the literature and it can be reasonably interpreted two ways, what is so off about that? I mean, if you're waiting for it to come to the board, it's going to get in a queue of a lot of other things. And narrowing down from several alternatives in the world to two and being clear why they both are reasonable interpretations, I don't see why that doesn't fit in an agenda decision. Decisions is you can read the standards to get to an answer. You know, pretty clear. Unfortunately, there's a case where there's two, and you can have an answer in the short term, or you can wait a very long time to maybe get an answer downstream. I mean, those are sort of the alternatives.
Well, I think in relation to the numerous alternatives, I think in practice we're actually seeing two views. So the two views in the paper, I think, from what I am picking up, are the views that we see in practice. If you look at it from a pure interpretative perspective, if you listen to the various views, there are some people who can see those two views in the wording. I don't personally, but I know there's variation out there. I would like to see our job as being not just being interpreting what's there. I'd like it to also to see it as being, if we find there's something which needs some attention to reduce diversity in practice, then we look at how that might be achieved. And so that perhaps answers the other part of the question.
And this is then, Andrew, just to, I think, pick up on Mary's point, are you, and I think this must be what you're saying, is because I think maybe your challenge, Gary, and Mary was saying, is that if we are saying there's two ways to read the words, working out whether we think standard setting are needed or not is embeds an assessment of whether you think, you know, people having those two ways of reading it in practice creates significant enough differences in a sense to be causing, you know, problems in the market in terms of how investors are reading the information. So I think, am I right in thinking embedded in your decision there is thinking that given what we've heard today and what you've seen in practice about the outcomes of applying these two views, in your view, you think the differences would be significant enough to say it matters, therefore we need to do standard setting?
I think it is that the differences could be substantial enough, even under IFRS 3 as it is today. And going forward with the amendments that are going to come to IFRS 3, I think the issue will become more significant.
Okay. Thank you. Reinhardt.
We in Canada, we discussed this issue at our IFS discussion group, you know, acknowledged that there were the two views in practice. I think there was a third view that people were aware of, but wasn't really followed. But my sense is, based on the discussion at the IFS discussion group, and based on my experience, although conceptually there could be a dramatic difference between the two views, I think in practice we don't see that, because I think what happens is, as was mentioned earlier, when people look at the fair values, as you said, Sue, they look at the financial assets with level one fair values being, that's a good estimate, and for the other assets there's a range. And so typically you won't find, at least we're not aware of in the Canadian marketplace, of substantial differences that result as a consequence of the way you apply the words in 2B. And so I wouldn't object to an agenda decision, because along the lines of what Gary and Mary said, I don't see this as a big enough issue, although conceptually it could be big, but in practice is a big enough issue to merit taking it on the agenda, spending you know, a bunch of time on something that may not have much practical effect. What I would suggest, though, is that we really emphasize in the agenda decision the importance of taking a look at, if you've got a material difference between your allocation and the cost, that you really take a look at the determination of those relative fair values. And then I think, as Andrew mentioned earlier, if we were to go ahead with an agenda decision acknowledging there's two ways of reading the words in the standard, that we be clear that you should be consistent in the way you read those words as opposed to cherry picking. And I think the final thing I would just point out is in the agenda decision, I think we have to be very careful that we don't, if we're going forward as an educative agenda decision, that we don't create the impression that one of those views is an error, or that I was a little bit concerned when I read that the wording that, you know, the two interpretations, the only ways that they could, the requirements could reasonably be read, which would, I think, might cause some people to think, well, maybe if I didn't do it quite exactly one of those two ways, I might have an error. I need to go back retrospectively because, of course, there's no transition requirements in an agenda decision, et cetera. So just a caution there.
Tony.
And my thoughts are very similar to Reinhardt's. I agree that there could be circumstances where the impact of doing it differently could be material. You could probably dream one up, but it's not something that I've seen in practice causing material differences. I think Andrew is right. There will be more acquisitions of groups of assets as a result of the changes to IFRS 3, and at the moment I don't know what impact that's going to have. Obviously, but at the moment, it's not something that seems to me to be causing an enormous issue in practice or resulting in material differences. And so for that reason, I would not be uncomfortable with dealing with it through an agenda decision. I agree that if we do the important point about when you do get a difference, you should have another look at your fair values, ought to be included. And I had probably two observations on the agenda decision. If we are going to say that there are two ways of looking at it, I probably wouldn't say, accordingly, the committee observed that an entity accounts for, which is the staff's preferred view, says do it that way, and then says there is an alternative. I think if we're saying that we don't want to narrow practice beyond those two, we should just accept there are two ways of doing it.
Bertrand, thank you.
I totally appreciate Mary's and Gary's comments, but I have not changed my mind. I think we need to do further research on this, and probably an agenda decision is not enough. Within my company, we do asset deals, acquisition. Generally, it's just one asset, so I must admit I have never encountered such an issue. I understand that it is not rare in practice in the real estate business, notably when you buy a property with the corresponding financial liability, and this issue is quite frequent, and sometimes it can lead to significant impacts. And more generally, apart from very specifically on this question, I find merits, even though in the future the business definition changes in IFRS 3, I find merits in effectively providing more guidance on asset deals accounting. And so I think this issue deserves an amendment to the standard to provide this additional guidance.
Martin, I didn't see you.
Thanks to Euromix. Yeah. I believe the topic is quite broad, and I'm not sure whether we have the right support from the board really to dig in that deep to the topic. And it also reminds me on another topic we have discussed in the past, this was on IFRS 5 and with regards to the groups of assets. And any time when you have a, say, group of assets with different measurement attitudes combined so that it gets challenging. So therefore, overall, a potential research project also could go on that. I understand the guidance we give, that we do not want more or less to have closer brackets to the topics. On the other hand, to give some ideas what then would be the two alternatives we believe are appropriate. What I miss, however, is something to address then. If you consider for one way, is this a one-time choice, or could you at each and every acquisition probably consider what would be the right approach? And it goes a little bit in that direction. Well, what is the overall composition of the group of assets and liabilities? And we haven't discussed effects coming out of liabilities only. In the examples, we're also only talking about allocating the price to the relevant assets and not specifically the financial liabilities, which are currently valued at not at fair value. So that's my view. So overall, I could live with the decision not to have it on the agenda. However, I would recommend to bring it to the attention of the board that overall, when you talk about portfolio of assets and liabilities with different measurement attitudes, that not only within IFRS 3, but also with regard to other standards, there might issues arise.
I would like to say there are different board members have different thoughts on this issue. So there are Mary's, Gary's thoughts, opinions on the board. So this, just we are giving some ideas. So personally, I think this we might need a kind of some, as you said, many people said, kind of research whether this kind of a thing is a really material effect or not. But your ideas here are kind of a one evidence this might be a kind of a significant issue, because many people are saying worrying about the potential effect of two interpretations. So the another thing is there whether interpretation committee can suggest any kind of amendment. I guess that's the depending on our constitution. So regardless of our interpretation of the constitution of the role of interpretation committee. So maybe I guess Andrew or many people said you have a right to suggest some kind of amendment of the IFRS. I agree with their point. So personally, I think we need a definite kind of action to decrease the diversity of the interpretation of the. So that's my personal opinion.
Thank you. In a minute, I'm going to ask for a vote on the agenda decision as proposed by the staff, and then we can talk next steps. But just as a general observation, I think if the committee did want to do investigate standard setting, then sort of narrow scope improvements are something that's within the remit of the committee. Young Su?
I just want to concur with what just Chung said. Jeremy just raised a question about what is the problem of providing two views. I think providing two views could have a problem when there is a big difference, material difference, resulting from two different methods. And that also caused some problems in comparability of the findings that I think we really don't want to see. So for that, I prefer to take just one view over two views. And another thing I want to say is that, you know, as I mentioned in the very, very in the beginning, the view two has some problems already remarked by the staffs. Sometimes we cannot allocate any cost to some of the assets in the group. And we already know some problems of some views, but still provided as an alternative doesn't seem to be right to me at all. So you know, my suggestion is to do some research on the material effect first, whether it's material or not. And if it's material, then we have to go much more on one method is really a proper method that we have to suggest.
I actually have no issue when it came out with one view and it supported
the
view.
Yes, I understand.
It really sort of being deferential to the staff's work and the legwork and stuff and saying there are two legitimate ways this can be read. And, you know, one thinks better than the other, but the other is not unacceptable. And if that's where we are, I can live with it. I think that can be articulated. Could we do more research to find out if it's material or not? I don't know if we can. I mean, I'm hearing that might be hard to get. and no one around the table today has said we've seen a lot of things in material, because these things are not necessarily heavily disclosed, and they wouldn't naturally be disclosed how you got your acquisition accounting done with the level of detail to know if it's material. Because you're right, you do it one way or you do it another way. So if we didn't deal with it now, the question is what happens? It could go back to the board. And by the way, it could be sent back in many months down the line saying we think this belongs to IC. You've got two interpretations. It's out of a universe of several more. That's something with disclosure. And again, I think we should decide if it's a policy choice or not soon we get through a few affirmative votes at that point.
Okay, thank you, Gary. Jim?
I am comfortable with the staff recommendation, knowing that there are different views or differences in practice for the reasons that Tony and Reynard Gary mentioned. Yeah, we theoretically have different views, but in practice, it should not be significant. All these views or processes have the fair value concept involved. And I think it's, as Reynard mentioned, that fair value is not a definite number. It's most of the times, it's a range. And just by making reasonable judgments, this practice could be eliminated in at the final differences. So I think we should leave it at this, since of course knowing that if we put different views on the agenda decision, that will look a little bit weird, that we should give them more definite answers, not to give them choices from our level. But I tend to say that at this moment, no, theoretically there are differences, but in practice it should not end up with significant differences in numbers. So we leave it like this until the new definition of a business coming out, and maybe more kind of stuff are pushed into our way, we'll evaluate then. Other than that, we don't need to spend our valuable stuff times to dig in to find the current significant practice.
And it's not just valuable staff time, we need to think about it. It's our stakeholders, because they then have to comment and provide us with input and everything, so it's a cost-benefit assessment. Marie?
I just would like to mention that I agree with that. I think often issuers do view one without thinking of exactly the way they should look at it. So if you go for an agenda decision which clearly emphasizes the fact that you can have two views which might be different, it can even create more diversity than what you have today. So I think if you go for an agenda decision, you should be really careful in the way you draft it, so that it enough gives the impression to people that it's creating even more views than what they are thinking today, because I don't think they see that as I go in this specific paragraph and I do this and that. So, and if it's an accounting policy choice, I think it should be really clearly mentioned, and you should answer to the question, is it an accounting policy choice on each transaction or something you do broadly on each time? So the way the agenda decision is drafted at the moment, I think, will lead to even more diversity and question than what you might have at the beginning.
Thank you. Bonnie.
So just reflecting on maybe the conversation that's happened since I last gave my point of view, and maybe Mary's thoughts. I don't think that we're going to get very good information on materiality. I think it would be very difficult, because that essentially a company will have had to, A, have had a transaction, and B, have done an analysis of view A, view B, view whatever, to really be able to say, okay, is this material or not? So I don't know that that's going to provide enough value for us to undertake the work. The second is, if we are comfortable that these two views are both acceptable under the current words, then I think a tentative agenda decision is appropriate. If we're not comfortable and we think there's only one view and that's the only view and the right view, then I think we need to do something different. One other just thought that I had, I've not seen these transactions in practice, so I can't really comment on the practical applications, but if as a company's negotiating a group of assets and liabilities, it could be that you know, if there are some pretty, you know, level one fair values of something, then that is the fair value of what the purchase price is that they've negotiated with, kind of the basket of everything else negotiated as a separate price. So the alternative view may, in fact, be the economics of the transaction, which I think there can be some basis for that interpretation. So I struggle a little bit with if we think it does lead to diversity in views and that's not consistent with the facts of a specific transaction with the words that are written, then I think we need to do something different. But if we think that the words do give us enough guidance to appropriately account for a transaction, and if there is diversity, perhaps that's because of the facts and circumstances of each transaction, then I think the tentative agenda decision, as the staff suggests, is appropriate.
Mary?
I think I'll pass. Thanks.
I'm going to try and vote in a second, but Bertrand, before we do?
Yeah, to what Gary and you said, Sue, one of the reasons I found merit in doing some additional research and an amendment, or at least going in at this stage in that direction, is at a certain point in time you will issue a draft and you will ask for comments, and you will receive comments, and those comments may be it will be a more profound outreach than what has been done so far. So you might get answers, valuable answers, that could enable us to decide whether it's widespread, significant or not. And then to then change our mind if necessary, if effectively the reactions at this stage or say that it's not frequent and or it's not significant, then we don't need effectively a standard setting process. But at least to initiate this standard setting process would enable us all to receive feedback.
I agree with that, but I think that the secondary question that will come up if the committee decides to go down that route is going to be just how broad the project is, because I think in one sense we could do something very narrow, which is just to say the words were meant to be, for argument's sake, view one, therefore what changes do we make to the words to make it clear that it's view one, or there's a broader philosophical debate about is that view one appropriate and should we do something different. And I'm not sure, you know, it's a very different sense of sort of resource and objective, so it's not clear cut to me what the next step could be. Now I've made Mary speak and I'm getting behind time.
thinking about Bertrand's interest in getting further input from the outside world, I think I just wanted to point out that if the interpretation committee's preliminary conclusion is to not undertake standard setting, the agenda decision itself is something that people react to, including from time to time, about whether or not. I mean, I'm trying really hard not to push you guys one way or another, because I'm an observer, not a member of the committee. Hearing the things, I think, you know, the first question, the one Sue's going to put to you is, do you think that the identified diversity in practice, because there is diversity, is one that has a significance that needs to be addressed? And either, you know, you have a preliminary view, either it does or it doesn't, and then you can sort out the words. And I think the staff has done the same degree of outreach. You know, they've done the normal, reasonably extensive trying to flush out how much of an issue this is in practice. Of course, we can always hear more, you know, in response as you go along, but this is not one of the ones that they've said for this reason or that reason not do the full normal outreach. So, it's a question of which way you want to go. If there is evidence of diversity, it's assessing the significance of the diversity and the scale of the standard setting and just thinking about whether that's a stakeholder priority.
Yep. Okay, Yang Su, last bit.
All right, I just want to make two comments. The first one is about Mary's question. If I come to here, I met several Korean practitioners, accounting practitioners, and I just asked them what kind of alternative views are they using in Korea, and most of them are saying that Korean companies are using view one. They don't have ever imagined view three at all. So if we issue two different views, that I think, as Mary said, we're going to create some diversity, and companies are going to take view three instead of view one. So it's going to create more diversity. That's what I want to say. That's the first point I want to say. And the second one is that, you know, we are when we are talking about the allocation, we always remember imagine that financial assets are level one financial assets. But what if the financial assets are level three assets? Their value is not going to be reliable. Is that also why we have to assign the transaction cost or transaction price onto the fair value of the level three financial asset first and then to the other assets? I'm not sure whether that order is a right order. The financial assets is not level one financial assets.
Not that we think level three is not reliable. Okay, we now need to vote, or you now need to vote on whether or not you agree with the staff's recommendation, which is, and in the first instance I'll ask you for a show of hands on who would support issuing a tentative agenda decision along the lines set out in the appendix. We can talk about accounting policy choice separately if that's okay. That would acknowledge the two different views that we've been discussing. So firstly, a show of hand for support for that form of agenda decision.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
7. 7.
And John?
No,
I don't support the agenda decision.
Okay, 7's enough, so that means proceed with that. But
I'm sorry, what was that, Sue?
7 is enough votes for us to expose the tentative agenda decision.
Because both, and just to make everybody aware of why that is, today we have 14 members, we need a simple majority, but today it's a simple majority of those attending. So because both Carol and Sandy are not attending at the moment, that will be 7 of 12. So therefore, that meets our due process requirements.
Okay. And it will be back with comment letters. So now can we talk about the suggestions that people have had in terms of adjustments to the agenda decision? So I think the main thing that I have heard is making it clear that this is not a transaction by transaction choice, but rather you're in one view or the other. So in effect, it's an accounting policy choice. I'm not sure if we can impose an accounting policy choice in an agenda decision per se, but perhaps we can make it clear that it's you either reading the words one way or the other, and therefore that's what you need to apply consistently.
That's what I'm hoping. I haven't worked out the words yet, but I'm hoping that we're able to come up with words that basically you read it this way always, or you read it this way.
The other thing I heard was a few people agreeing that it was important to have this comment about the difference in fair values and that being a reason to look more closely. Any other comments on the draft agenda decision?
I heard a couple of others. Sorry, Tony, do you want to come in? I was going to say I heard a couple of others that at least were happy to try and do, subject to you agreeing. So I also heard a kind of bit more balance, that if we're going to acknowledge there are two ways to read, we'll try and get that more balanced. Yeah, and the other thing, and I know these are fine-tuning drafting now, but only just to say I noted it. I know somebody mentioned thinking we talk about two interpretations. Maybe that word interpretations is, it could be confusing. Maybe we talk about two accounting treatments, two ways of doing the accounting, something a bit more.
Probably I also would be concerned if there would be a severe shift between financial and operating income, because in general analysts have a quite close look to the operating income, and if you have more or less the ability to shift it to one side or the other, then for me that would be something I would expect in the critical accounting policies to be discussed. Yeah, because for analysts that could be, it could be an interesting topic.
Okay, so with that, you know what we're doing. Okay. Thank you, that was a good discussion, I think.